Podheads, and welcome back to another episode of Over My Dead Pod. I'm your host for today, Kate Carter.
And I'm Carly Colwell.
And I'm Holly Spear.
And you guys, we did it. We're at 100 episodes. Woo! Snaps. Snaps.
I can't believe 100 episodes. Wow.
That's a shitload of, like, that is a lot of time.
A lot of time, a lot of work, a lot of fun.
Got drinks in hand. We're doing a good case today. You guys are going to be shocked as usual on this one. So yeah, thank you to everybody listening for subscribing, following us, just really loving on us for these past 100 episodes. We were hella rocky at the beginning. We're doing a lot better now. I always tell people to skip like the first 10 episodes. I'm like, we get better. Just keep going.
Start off from the 100 and work down to one.
There you go.
And be gracious.
Yeah.
I mean, it just gets better every time. So yeah. I think we're doing great, sweetie.
Yeah, you're doing great. Let's jump right in. So today, so excited. Today I'm going to dive into a story that kind of unfolded right before all of our eyes. And that was mainly because of social media. So I tend to talk shit all the time about technology, social media, the media, and honestly, that's because a lot of it is usually harmful to a case. You know, misinformation gets spread so quickly, shit goes to shit, and the case goes a whole different direction. But in this case's instance, it did quite the opposite. So this is a story you all know. It dominated the headlines in the media for months upon months in 2021. It trended number one on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Today, I'm going to be talking about a road trip gone wrong. Gone very wrong. In 2021, a couple set off to what was supposed to be the ultimate van life adventure when they traveled across the United States. But after a short few weeks, the world, the investigators, and everyone were left desperate to find out what exactly happened. With an insane amount of expected twists and turns, a beyond frustrating ending, this is the story of the disappearance and death of Gabby Petito and her fiance, Brian Laundrie.
I had a feeling. I fucking knew it.
I had zero feeling and I'm shook.
I literally just said that. I gave myself goosebumps. So I hope you guys have goosebumps as well. So on a side note for everyone listening before I get started, I also do want to mention that when this case happened, it was in 2021. All three of us here were in law school together. So we fortunately or unfortunately got to see this case and its investigation in real time. Gabrielle Petito. We're going to call her Gabby. That's what she went by. She was born on March 19th, 1999 in Blue Island, New York. She came from a very close-knit family, but separated family. Her parents were divorced, both had remarried. And with those marriages came lots of step-siblings. I think Gabby was one of six kids, I want to say. She was raised in a very normal, like, household. Everything was pretty easygoing. Not something we hear very often. She was described as a creative and adventurous spirit. Growing up, she enjoyed drawing, yoga, and had this deep appreciation early on for like nature and hiking. She was a little hippie girl. And she always talked about how she wanted to travel the world and see what it had to offer after school. And that's exactly what she did. After graduating high school in 2017, Gabby took a few years to travel and gain some life experience. But going back to high school, while she was in school, Gabby had actually met a young man named Brian Laundrie. He was in the same friend group as her, but the two of them never really like hung out on their own. They didn't really socialize together. Like they were just two people in the same friend group. It wasn't like a thing. Gabby was this super cute, thin but athletic build. She was blonde, outgoing girl. Brian was this guy that everyone in high school thought he was possibly a narc. And that's because if you go and look at his pictures from high school, he looked twice his age. Like the pictures you see out on social media of Brian, like when this case all went down, is what he looks like in high school.
He's bald.
He was bald. He had a beard and he was like 15 when that all happened. So people were like, oh, he's an undercover cop. Like that was the going joke.
He also does just kind of look like a cop, to be honest.
He does look like he could be a narc for sure.
Yeah.
I'm just imagining 21 Jump Street.
Yes. A mix between the two of them, yes.
But bald.
Yes. Anyway, so the two of them, Gabby and Brian, connected back up after high school and began apparently officially dating in March of 2019. Now, I say apparently because Gabby didn't actually tell anyone that they were dating. They basically spent every day together, went on adventures together for months. But when she was asked if she was dating Brian, she always would just like change the subject. It wasn't until months later that Gabby even told her mom that they were dating. All right, so let's talk about Brian. Brian Christopher Laundry. He was born on November 18th, 1997. He was also born in Blue Island, New York. He was one of two kids. He was the youngest and kind of similar to Gabby in the sense of like, he loved the arts growing up. He was known to be like this nature dude. He loved to travel. And pretty quickly after Gabby and Brian started dating in early 2019, Gabby moved in with Brian and his parents in Northport, Florida. It's on the west coast side of Florida, kind of where Kylie is a little bit, but it's smack in the middle between Sarasota and Fort Myers. So this is actually when Gabby's mom found out that her and Brian were dating. Even though Gabby's mom was a little worried about her moving to Florida with Brian so quickly into their relationship, it kind of went in one ear, out the other. And a week later, Gabby was off to the Sunshine State. After moving to Florida, Gabby and Brian began working at a local Publix together. Shout out Publix. Brian worked in the produce department and Gabby was a farm tech. I never knew that. The same year, the couple went off on a cross-country trip together. They traveled from Florida to California and drove throughout all of the West Coast. But on this trip, the two of them were driving in Gabby's Nissan Sentra, which is this like four-door smaller car, reminds me of like the Honda Civic. And so obviously the size of the car made it kind of difficult for the couple to like get around and live in their car for this road trip adventure. So they decided that if they wanted to keep doing these kind of trips, they were going to need a bigger vehicle. Well, Gabby had already owned her 2012 white Ford Transit van, and the pair decided that together they wanted to convert it into a camper. They were able to transform this simple van into a camper van for themselves so that they could go on these long road trips and live out of the van. And when they get into this cool lifestyle, Gabby then decided she was going to start documenting their travels. So Gabby had like this big idea of starting a YouTube channel and going on Instagram and becoming like this van life type of influencer. And I totally get it because 2017, 2019, I feel like that was like the hit. Everybody was doing like the camper vans, the nomad lifestyle, or at least that was like the dream.
Did you guys? Yeah, that was so big at that time.
Would you guys ever consider that?
Hell no.
I hate driving, so no.
Living in a small confined space with like someone else and my dogs, that sounds like not the opposite of a vacation, whatever that is.
Cam and I always talked about, literally when we first started dating, we totally could do that. We could do the whole camper van lifestyle. But now that we've gone like 9 years into the relationship, when I told Cam I was doing this story, he was like, oh my God, wouldn't it be so fun to like do this? Like, we used to talk about this. And I was like, fuck no. Like, absolutely not. I would kill him. I would, pun intended.
I would not do it with a man.
Nope.
Yeah, that could change everything. Are we talking about us or are we talking about with a significant other? Yeah.
Because I could do it with a friend. Yeah.
Maybe with y'all. I mean, I could.
We'll have to get a bigger van, but you know, one of those Mercedes Benz, like big ones. Gabby pretty much started her Instagram to document her and Brian's lives. And her first post on her Instagram was with Brian a few days before her 21st birthday. A few months later, Gabby posted that her and Brian were engaged. Yay. And though they were engaged, it came as a complete shock to everybody. None of Gabby's friends or family knew that they were getting engaged. Her mom, who she was super close to, actually found out about the engagement on Facebook. And after talking to Gabby on the phone, her mom found out that yes, she was engaged, but Brian actually didn't propose with anything, not a ring, nothing. But Gabby said she didn't mind. And her mom thought that was like, not really a Gabby thing. Gabby said that it meant more like they were promising each other to get married one day and that they're supposed to be together forever. But for right now, they just want to like live their lives and travel. In the back of my head, I'm like, okay, babe, that's like a promise ring. You know, like that's not, you don't need to have an engagement then, you know?
In hindsight, looking back, I think it's very weird that she didn't tell her parents she was dating Brian. She didn't tell them she was like planning to move to Florida until she just moved. And she also didn't tell them that she was engaged. Like,
it gives some flags, doesn't it?
Yeah, some red flags, things
now
you
that
should
we
be
know.
happy about that she's not sharing with her closest people. It's a little odd.
For sure. But in early of 2021, as we all know and vividly remember, I remember because I died 500 times, COVID hit. And that's when Gabby and Brian both decided to quit their jobs at Publix and really dive into this traveling van lifestyle. The two had planned another big cross-country trip, and that was supposed to start on July 2nd, 2021. The plan for this trip would be to be gone about 4 months. They were going to visit as many national parks as possible and go from New York to the West Coast. And then the final plan was they were going to end in Oregon and stay at a family friend's home in Portland. So that was going to be like the finale. So on July 2nd, 2021, the two took off on their adventure. 2 days into the trip, Gabby began posting on her Instagram story. And honestly, I mean, we all know this because we saw them happening, but the pictures were really good. I mean, it was a bunch of like nature, scenic things, but not only the pictures of their trip on social media, but it was also the dates and the location. And that was with every single post that she did, which comes in handy later on as a timeline for events. On July 4th, the two had made it to Grove County, Kansas. On July 8th, they were in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So in Colorado, they spent a few days traveling the state. And then on July 16th, they made it to the Zion National Park in Utah. In Utah, they spent most of their trip. So they ventured out to, from at least what we know based off of solely Gabby's travel Instagram posts and their location, that they got to go and explore the Zion National Park, Bryce Canyon National Park, Mystic Hot Springs, Canyonlands National Park, and the Arches National Park between the dates of July 16th and August 19th. So a little over a month. This was definitely, as you can tell, the majority of their trip. But throughout all of the parks, Gabby posted and made videos documenting everything they did on her camera. She posted a lot to her Instagram account. And like I said, always wrote the location. On August 12th, 41 days into their travels, the Moab Police Department received a call from a concerned citizen who wanted to report a domestic dispute. The caller reported that on Main Street, there was a man running up and down the sidewalks with a girl and that he was slapping her. The caller stated that he pulled over when he saw this going on and that the couple got into their white Ford van with a Florida license plate and took off.
Grant County Sheriff's Office.
Were you able to get a description of the intoxication?
Hi, can you hear me, sir?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Hi, I'm calling. I'm right on the corner of Main Street by Moonflower, and we're driving by, and I'd like to report a domestic dispute. Florida with a white van, Florida license plate, white land, gentleman, 5'6" beard. They just drove off. They're going down Main Street. They made a right onto Main Street from Moonflower.
Or what were they doing?
Cooperative, but what'd you say?
What were they doing?
We drove by and the gentleman was slapping the girl.
He was slapping her?
Yes, and then we stopped. They ran up and down the sidewalk. He proceeded to hit her, hopped in the car, and they drove off.
Okay, you said it's a white van?
White van. I can give you the license plate if you give me 1 sec. I took a picture of it.
What kind of white van? Like a big one?
It was a smaller van with the license plate of, it was white, Florida license plate, QFT-G03. It was, the make was a Ford, model was Transit, black ladder on the passenger side.
Black ladder, passenger side.
White Ford Transit.
White Ford Transit. Okay, what's your name? And where did they, so they turned, they headed south on Main Street from Moonflower Market?
Correct. They made the right turn.
Oh, so they went north?
North. Yeah, sorry, I'm not from around here.
Okay, you're right there by the post office?
Right across the street, yep.
Okay, and when they turned onto Main Street, they went right or left?
Right.
Right, so they went north. North on Main. All right, I will let somebody know. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
Bye.
Thanks. I have to say that is the like most descriptive 911 caller. Like he had the license plate. He knew the van, what direction they went in. Like gave
you know,
a
that full... was a crime junkie right there. Like 100%.
He knew what to do. Yeah.
He knew exactly what to do. The guy had every detail for the police. I also want to say the fact that the 911 operator wasn't more hyped about that. They were very like, what was happening? He was doing what? Where? And I'm over here like,
with who?
License plate, color. He had the height description of Brian. He had all of the details. Took a picture of a license plate. Genius.
Impressive.
Okay, so minutes later, the Moab police saw this apparent white Ford van with the Florida license plate on the highway. It was going very under the speed limit. It was going about 44 miles per hour. It was weaving in and out of the lane, and eventually it hit a curb. At this point, the cops turned the lights on and proceeded to pull it over. Once they got to the passenger side door, they find a crying Gabby inside. And Brian was sitting on the driver's side, obviously having been driving the vehicle. Both of them immediately started apologizing to the cop. And that's when Gabby started to say that it had just been a bad day for them and that she was worried. And it was just, you know, a bad morning. And just remember this entire time, this entire freaking video that she's with the police officers, Gabby is crying the entire time. The cop asked for her to get out of the van and asked her some questions. She is visibly shaken up and there are marks on both her face and her arm. Gabby says she doesn't know where those are from and continues to say that her and Brian got into a fight this morning after he wouldn't let her in the van. But she also told the cops multiple times that she, Gabby, was the one that hit him. When police talk to Brian, he is joking around the entire time. He's laughing. He's making fun of the situation, not taking it serious at all. Brian also had marks on his face that kind of look like scratches. Brian pretty much stated the exact same thing that Gabby did and said that Gabby had attacked him first and not vice versa. Multiple cops ended up on the scene and that led to multiple cops talking to both Brian and Gabby. But in the end, they did not arrest or cite either of them with domestic abuse or something of that sort. They decided to break the couple apart for the rest of the day and night. They told them to actually leave each other alone and to reach out to each other in the morning. The police took Brian to a hotel room, which, by the way, didn't know this part. The hotel that they took Brian to was a hotel for domestic abuse survivors. Fucking nuts. I'm sorry. Okay. And then the cops told Gabby that she could have the van for the night. So, like, Brian gets a hotel room, and Gabby is just left on her own in their van in a place she's never been before, which, like, it, I don't, in my head, I'm like, I don't really care who it is that was the aggressor. I just feel like that's just odd to do. Like you would think it'd be the other way around regardless of the situation. But like I said, the cops instructed both of them to not talk to each other until the morning. This entire interaction was actually released by the Moab police months later. We'll get into that part. But the entire body cam footage was over an hour long. So here is a recap video of the body cam footage for you guys to get like a little bit more.
His names.
Gabby.
I'm Brian. Gabby, Brian. Okay. What's going on? How come you're crying?
I'm just crying. We've just been fighting this morning. Some personal issues.
You want to tell me what's going on?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just some days I have really bad OCD. And
okay.
I was just cleaning and straightening up the back of the van before, and I was apologizing to him and saying, I'm sorry that I'm so mean, because sometimes I have OCD and sometimes I just get really frustrated. Not like mean towards him. I just like, I guess my vibe is like, I'm like in a bad mood. And I was just saying, I'm sorry if I'm in a bad mood. I've just been really stressed. I had so much work I was doing on my computer this morning.
What do you do for a living?
Well, I used to work at an organic juice bar, but I just quit my job.
Okay.
I was a nutritionist.
That's my job. Cool.
And I just quit my job to travel across the country, and I'm trying to start a blog.
Okay.
Have a blog and stuff. So I've been building my website, so I've just been really stressed, and he doesn't really believe that I could do any of it, so that's kind of been like a, I don't know, he's like a downer. I don't know, we've just been fighting all morning, and he wouldn't let me in the car before. And
why wouldn't he let you in the car? Because
of
your OCD?
He told me I needed to calm down. Yeah.
Take a seat.
I didn't get overtly physical. I was just trying to keep her away and not get hit. And then I got really loud, and like that's probably drew everyone's attention where I was going, you know, back up, get away, just give me a...
Okay, so, so you said you pushed her to create some distance, obviously, yeah. Right? What happened after that? What got the scratches on your eye?
The phone.
The phone? So you pushed her and she hit you?
She was... It wasn't like a push and she jumped on me. She was already... I don't want to... She was already swinging and I was pushing.
Multiple.
A lot of angles, a lot of nails, a lot of rings.
Yeah, you got three scratches in your neck. You got one on your left side of your nose. You got one in your face here and you got four bleeding over there.
So I just tried
it. So it's like two hands. Do you mind lifting up your right sleeve for me? I'm curious about something.
I suppose fingernails, but yeah, I'm not complaining. Absolutely. I'm not complaining about
fingernails. Is it bruised or tender or anything like
no,
that?
No. Okay. I'm fine, and I love Gabby. I hope she doesn't have too many complaints about me. I'm just, I feel bad I didn't get so public. I was just trying to be loud to get some distance. You know, just try to make her calm down and be like, look, everyone's watching.
I'll say crisscross applesauce, but can I just sit in the shade because I'm bald?
It's okay. I'll give you some shade. Sound good?
Alrighty, just hang tight for me. I've decided I am not going to cite you for domestic violence battery, okay? It was only going to be a Class B misdemeanor. However, the domestic violence portion of it enhances it. Makes like a major pain in the butt, especially at your 22, right? So I'm choosing not to cite you today. I'm not gonna release you guys together. I want you guys to stay away from each other tonight. Okay. She's agreed to it. Take some time to yourselves. You guys both have the exact same story as to what led up to the incident. So, taking some time tonight, specifically, taking tonight away from each other is going to be the major breaker in all of this. I think that'll help you guys, especially tomorrow when you guys meet up. Just try to not contact each other unless, like I said, earth shattering, something happens, you guys have to jump in the car right now and drive back to Florida because something happened to
Paris. So when I watched that video, and like we said before, all three of us have watched that hour 17 full length video multiple times. Like we were with each other in the same area when all this was going down. It's pretty fucking obvious that Gabby is the most upset. Brian is just laughing and joking around. Gabby's crying for an hour and 17 minutes. She has a fucking bruise on her face and her eye like she got socked. That's all I gotta say. You guys go ahead.
I think that they completely ignored the police report of them saying that they saw a male slapping a female. They hardly asked about that at all. They were like, the very beginning, they were like, oh, we got reports of like a girl being slapped or whatever. But I mean, like you said, we've watched the whole video. They never... nail him down. They never drill him on that. I think they just kind of gloss over it because he's being very complicit and very compliant. And he's being like funny and charming. And she's over here just like bawling her eyes out. She obviously has terrible anxiety. It's a pretty sad video to watch. I think it was handled pretty poorly. I think that they were trying to do what they thought was best, but I think that hindsight's 50-50, right? But
yeah.
I just, looking back, to me, it looks pretty obvious what's going on.
And like, I will say too, if you don't know the Gabby Petito case, I'm sorry that we're kind of just spoiling it from the beginning, but the Moab Police Department actually ends up getting in a lot of trouble at the end of this case. And people chat on them still to this day for like how this interaction went down. My takeaway from it is they ignored the police report that came in, but they did a lot of their job. Like I actually wasn't that upset with them. I think a few things here and there, if I was being nitpicky though, and that's because we know how everything turned out in the moment. They asked so many questions. They pulled her aside. They pulled her out of the car, stuff like this. But the way that she was acting compared to him should have just been red. Like it just, regardless.
Well, like-
us knowing
if you had pulled them over for reckless driving and you saw this girl crying, you pulled her out of the car and you're like, okay, what's going on, like what's happened, I think that they would have handled that situation perfectly. But you can't discredit a random pedestrian saying, hey, I just witnessed a male slap a female.
And like, to the point where he stopped his car, got out, and took a picture of their license plate.
Yeah, like, there'd be no reason for somebody to exaggerate something like that. And I think that the police, they kind of lost track of that somehow within this investigation. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I don't think they did like a terrible job. They separated them. They tried to figure out what was happening. But I don't know, maybe just because the police officers were men or they're not well versed with like domestic violence victims. Like the woman's crying. Obviously, we know like abuse victims, they're not just going to like say what happened right off the get go.
Domestic abuse, they usually don't, you know, especially if you're dealing with a narcissist.
Yeah, like you have a woman crying with bruises on her face. She's saying nothing happened. I would lean into or ask a few more questions.
Like she's also blaming herself too.
Right. And like, yes, he did have scratches
on his face. And Brian's blaming her.
Right. He had scratches on his face, but I didn't even put this in the story because I kind of forgot about it until now. We'll put a picture up on our YouTube about this, but I didn't see it until I watched the documentary on Gabby Petito that's on Netflix. It's new of this year. Go watch it. It actually was really good. That later on, cops found a photo in Gabby's phone from that morning where her face was bruised. And when you go and look at this picture, that was the first time I had seen it.
Yeah, can we talk about that?
It literally, like from the time that it happened, like her eye is black and underneath it is bruised. It is in no possible way did she do that to herself unless she like smacked something. But then for somebody to be like, oh yeah, he was slapping her. And then she's like, no, it was me the whole time. Yeah, bitch, but what happened to your face? Like, that's just, it was so much worse than what Brian's face looked like.
Well, and it's also, for people who haven't seen it, they show this video at the end of the documentary. They show this picture that Gabby's taken on her phone that happened that same day. And she has a bruise on her face. And it's unmissable. And I don't see that in this video. So that confused me a little bit about the documentary. When did that occur? When did the bruise happen?
In the documentary, the police said that basically was from that incident. I don't know when she took the picture, but they said it was from like that time. So I'm thinking she was probably the next day or something like that.
Okay.
You know, like, I mean, to the point, yeah, because you can't really see it in the video, but I will say you also couldn't see a lot of her face in the video. Like it was usually one side or the other kind of situation. But
regardless, but if she had that on her face and the cops saw that, then it changes my whole mind about them doing a good job because it was
it was the cop that pointed it out to her. He was like, so what about the marks on your face and your arm? Like, so he obviously saw something. They did a good job, but to an extent, I think if this is when domestic violence training would come in handy. And granted, I don't know anything about Moab, Utah. You know, I don't really know how big it is. Probably should look that up. But I can't imagine that it's like New York City, you know, where it's this giant town. They have tons of training. They have these kind of situations all the time.
And I don't think it showed it in this video, but in the full video, the two or three cops, I can't remember if there was two or three, they begin like the main cop that arrived there first, he begins like talking to the other cops, going over the law of like what his options are and what to do. And he's just like, technically we have to do this, but we don't have to enforce this part. Like they did do their job. I think they just didn't. I don't know.
It's hard. I feel like in the moment they did what they could.
Yeah.
And everybody saw this video, and I'll talk about it later, but like, this video did not go out publicly until shit went to shit. So we're all seeing this video when we already knew a little too much, you know? So in the moment, it could have been completely different. And I will say, if you watch the whole video too, one of the cops is female. She was actually the one that was like, Brian's saying she was hitting him. She's saying he was hitting Brian. We got to separate the two. So it wasn't like there was any type of like, you know, male versus female kind of thing either. I mean,
technically, I think what they were talking about when they were talking about like, oh, this is the law and like, this is what we can do to kind of like what this is what we have to do and this is what we can choose to do. They were talking about charging Gabby.
Right. Because right. 100%.
Both Gabby and Brian had said that Gabby was the one that hit Brian.
Yeah.
So technically they should have charged Gabby
as
an abuser. Whether that's true or not, I say not. But
I think in that moment when they were like, we're not going to charge her, there was something in the back of their heads that they were like, we have a reason for why we're not charging her.
Well, because she's a little girl. That makes a difference, but they said in the video, they're like, she's 110 pounds. She's not going to.
All right. So August 19th, Gabby posted her first video ever on her YouTube channel. Her YouTube channel was called The Normatic Static. I actually didn't know that that was the name of a YouTube channel. I love it. Normatic Static. This channel, Gabby really wanted it to kick off in regards to like her travels, their lifestyle, and in order to become this van life influencer. This 8-minute video ended up being the only video that was ever posted to her YouTube channel. So on the same day that the video was posted, Gabby also posted to her Instagram. It was a picture of their van from a drone angle and also a picture of their van from inside. And weirdly enough, the caption was actually about some man in the park that they were at. Like, this guy didn't throw his trash away. And these pictures were the first time that Gabby actually didn't include the location of where the pictures were being taken. And like I said before, she liked to tag the location, and that kept her followers updated on her and Brian's travel locations. Her friends and her family really solely relied off of these posts sometimes because there was no Wi-Fi. They saw these. They were like, oh, we haven't heard from Gabby in 2 days. Oh, look, she's at this national park. We know where she is, kind of thing. On these pictures specifically, Brian's account was tagged. So Brian was pretty well known to be into this whole like recycling thing, against the production of waste, really into recycling, and totally against littering. On Brian's Instagram for years, he would often post about this topic. Like, every single one of his pictures would be like a normal picture, and then the caption would be something about like recycling or like not throwing out trash. So it was like that kind of vibe. So when this post went up on Gabby's social media about this dude's trash, people were like, oh, maybe Brian posted this from her account. It didn't help that the wording really didn't sound like Gabby's post at all either. The post read, almost immediately after telling Brian's Instagram handle how happy it made me to see that people were truly respectful of this park, I watched some guy leave his processed, prepackaged plastic conglomerate of lunch garbage on the picnic table, end quote. Like, if you look at the fact that, like, when the pictures were posted, one of the pictures, like, the post didn't make sense at all. One of the pictures were like this drone shot of the van, and it's like rocks, like white rocks underneath the van. And then the other picture is from inside of the van, but the background outside didn't look like Utah. It looked like mountains, like Colorado-ish. And people later figured out that that was actually true based off of the landscaping. So just know it was like two different pictures in one post, not Gabby's vibe kind of thing. She was doing in the moment kind of shit. So 2 days later, on August 21st, it was Gabby's 21st birthday, 21 on the 21st. And her stepdad, Jim, actually FaceTimed her to wish her a happy birthday and eventually sent her and Brian an Uber Eats pizza to eat for dinner. On this date, Gabby and Brian were staying at a hotel in Salt Lake City. It was like their special thing to do for her birthday, but they weren't able to order food for themselves because they're, funny enough, actually really sad, there had been a power outage at the hotel the night that they were staying, which like sucks. Like, the one time you're out of your fucking camper van and you don't have hotel Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. So the next day, August 22nd. Now, like I've said before, I didn't know this until I watched the Netflix episode, because I've listened to so many podcasts on this, lived it real time kind of thing, but I was actually kind of against watching the Netflix special until I decided, you know what, I'm just going to do the fucking episode. And then I watched it and I was like, wow, this was actually, they did a great job. They covered a lot of good things. This was an interesting part that I learned. On August 22nd, Gabby sent a text message to her ex-boyfriend, Jackson. And at that point, when they sent the text message, it led to both of them jumping on a call with one another. Apparently, her and Brian had like gotten into a fight or something. He had left the hotel. And in this phone call, Jackson later recalled that Gabby was like, her mood was off. He could tell that something was going on. And Gabby mentioned at some point that she was planning on breaking things off with Brian and, quote, she had a plan. So obviously, once the phone call ended, ex-boyfriend Jackson was like, okay, weird. Don't know why that happened.
Her and Jackson had dated, I think, for like a little over a year before her and Brian started dating. Gabby and Jackson always talked about in high school how they wanted to travel the U.S. together in a van. So like, kind of like a sad thing to now see your ex doing it with like someone new. Like that would be very sad. So Jackson was like, weird phone call. Don't know why that happened. I'm going to keep an eye out on Gabby though, because the situation kind of sounds weird. So a few days later, August 24th, Gabby and Brian are still at the same Salt Lake City, Utah hotel. And Gabby and her mom FaceTimed. Gabby kept in touch with her mom quite often. It was usually like 4 to 5 times a week. I totally get that. I don't know about you guys. My mom and I talk every single day. She's my lifeline. But her mom was pretty much always updated on like, where is Gabby? What is she doing on this trip? Like safety reasons. On that day, Gabby told her mom that they were off to the Yellowstone National Park. So the next day, August 25th, Gabby posted a series of photos on her Instagram account, but once again, no location was tagged. So these photos were a series of pictures of Gabby. This is the very famous post. She was in front of this butterfly mural, and it was in the town of Ogden, Utah. And the caption was, "Happy Halloween," which it's August. So nobody in the moment was like, what is this? Is weird. Why are you doing this? Not like a fun thing that Gabby did, but like, happy Halloween. Here's a picture of me at a butterfly mural. And I think it was like 5 or 6 pictures, and they ended up becoming very famous pictures. But anyways, on the same day, August 25th, Gabby's mom talked to her on the phone. Gabby said they're near the Grand Teton National Park. 2 days later, August 27th, Gabby's mom got a text from her and just updating her as usual, saying they're in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. The same day, Brian and Gabby could be seen on the security footage entering and exiting a local Whole Foods. That would end up being the last known footage of Gabby Petito. In the same conversation between Gabby and her mom asked Gabby if her and Brian were breaking up just based off of things that like Gabby had mentioned to her. And Gabby responded with something along the lines of like, "I'm fine. I convinced Brian to go camp out in the woods so I can have the van to myself." And then she said, like, that's something he wants to do is go camp out in the woods. I don't really care. Like, it's her van. So, I mean, she can technically do whatever she wants to. But the two of them, from what her mom knew, were splitting apart in that moment. So the text went on and said, quote, "I told Brian I could make more money if I was a solo female van lifer. I'm driving to a campsite now," period. That was it. So just weird little text, nothing to be like freaked out about, but a little odd, like this doesn't make much sense. 3 days after that, on August 30th, Gabby's mom received a very odd text from her. And this is when her mom was like, this is a little odd. This text said, quote, "Can you help Stan? I keep getting his voicemails and missed calls. My phone doesn't even ring. There's no service," end quote. And the reason that this text was odd was because Stan was Gabby's grandfather. Never referenced him as Stan. Wasn't like she would ever call him Stan. In the moment when Gabby's mom read the text, she was like, weird. Don't know why she said that. Maybe Brian sent the text and Gabby was driving the van. So that was kind of like her excuse of like why that text went out. You know, because obviously in the moment, nothing suspicious was happening. So you're kind of like, weird. I don't know why they would say that, but maybe this is the reason kind of thing.
Yeah. You're not thinking anything super sinister about something like that. But you would notice it.
Yeah. So in the first week of September, about a week after the Stan no service text, no one had heard from Gabby. Her parents, who she talked to multiple times a week normally, hadn't gotten any calls or texts. Her friends noticed that her Instagram hadn't been active in a week, which was also something out of the norm, as she was constantly updating it with pictures and locations. Gabby's family finally reached out to Brian's parents after the week, Chris and Roberta, but received no response. And we'll get into Chris and Roberta later. In fact, Gabby's mom sent a second text to Roberta, but this time the text went through as green, which we all know. You send a text to someone, let's say iPhones. You send a text to someone, in this case it was iPhones, the text goes through as blue. When you send a text as green, or if it goes through as green, you either have no cell service and like the data ain't on, you're not on Wi-Fi, and it's trying so hard to deliver your text, or you've been blocked.
And Gabby's parents kind of understood that right away. They were like, I think she just blocked us. So super odd. Obviously, this raised like a kind of a red flag for Gabby's family. Hadn't heard from them a week. Brian's parents aren't answering. And by the 11th day of not hearing from Gabby, the Petito family decided that they were going to go file a missing persons report at the Suffolk County Sheriff's Department. This is when people began making social media posts that we would later see about Gabby being missing and asking for help. So it wasn't until 11 days later that it went out to the public that Gabby was missing from the last time she was heard from someone. But September 11th, the same day that Gabby was reported missing, officers from the North Point Police Department down in Florida, they went to the laundry house to see if they could speak with Brian's parents to see if they knew anything about Gabby's disappearance. And that's when, for the first time, they find out Brian is home. He wasn't in Wyoming. He's not with Gabby. He had been home since September 1st, so 10 days. And we'll play the clip in a second. Brian's parents refused to speak to the cops. They immediately stated that they didn't know what was going on and that the cops could speak to their attorney. That was the end of the conversation. Gabby hadn't even been reported for a day. It wasn't even 24 hours. And Brian's parents had already retained an attorney. It just didn't make sense. I fucking remember when this happened and we were all like, what is, when this video came out from the body cam footage of the cop going to their door, I remember just being like, Brian killed her. Like, what? This is boom, like mind blowing kind of thing. So here's the video of the body cam footage.
That's for police department.
Yes.
How you doing, sir? I apologize for bothering you. I have the detective on the phone.
I'm not talking to anybody.
You don't want to talk to us?
No.
Okay, she's on the phone. You don't want to talk to her now?
No.
Okay, it's when was the last time that you saw Brian and Gabriel?
Well, Brian is here.
Brian is here?
Yeah, and that's all I'm going to say.
And that's all that you're saying?
Yeah, we have an attorney. They've been calling. I don't know. That's all I want to say. I don't know why so many attorneys are aware
okay.
of the calling. So I can give you his number.
Whose number? The attorney's number?
Yeah.
Okay, I would like that, please, so I can give it to the detective. Thank you. Thank you, I appreciate it. Yep. And just to let the detective know, is Gabriel here? Or
no?
No. She's not here, okay.
Yeah, the felon was here last night.
Yeah, okay, so is this her vehicle? Her van?
It's both of them.
It's both of them?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, thank you, appreciate it.
I mean, I gotta play devil's advocate a little bit.
Kylie, go on.
What? Okay.
Ow.
I'm not defending the parents, but I think it is well advised to have an attorney present if they're questioning anybody, especially your kid.
But they didn't even know that like Gabby was missing. They weren't supposed to know that Gabby was missing until that cop showed up.
Even if my kid was guilty, I'm going to call an attorney and I'm also going to whoop my kid's ass. But I'm going to call an attorney.
You're going to tell me that footage, you watch it, even knowing what we know, you watch it and you're like, what the, like, that is the weirdest reaction you could have to a cop showing up to your house being like, hey, your son's girlfriend's missing. Do you guys know anything? And they're like, speak to our attorney.
No, yeah. I think it's definitely weird how quick and like stern they were about that. I definitely think they knew everything before the cops even showed up. It is weird that, I don't know, they were so adamant about the attorney, but I think that's what you're supposed to do.
It is, but in the situation that you're guilty, that's what you're supposed to do.
A non-guilty person wouldn't even think that way, but you probably should, even if you're not guilty, get an attorney.
If you're right over my dead pod, we recommend if a cop ever tries to talk to you, investigator, FBI, whatever, contact your attorney. Don't say shit, okay? Invoke your Fifth Amendment.
Oh, they know by now.
Yep. If you don't know, this is the 100th episode. We're telling you right now. Don't do what? Take a polygraph test. Don't do what? Talk to anybody without your attorney. But in this instant, fucking weird. All right, red flags.
But so, we'll still judge you.
We're still going to judge you. If you take that polygraph and you pass, I'm still going to think you're lying. Doesn't matter. All right, so getting a little hyped up here. To make things worse, in this body cam footage, in this moment, Gabby's white van, what? Where was it? It was in the laundry's driveway. But Gabby was not there. She was nowhere to be found. Brian was apparently in the home in Florida. The van was home in Florida, but where was Gabby? And I do want to say something about this too. So the last text, and I use that word lightly, from Gabby was supposedly from the Grand Teton National Park. Now, if you don't know where that is, that's Wyoming. All right. Actually, it spreads out a lot, but they were in Wyoming. And that was from August 30th. Brian's parents told the cop that Brian had been home on September 1st. So you're telling me, that Brian drove, because I done calculated it, other people done calculated it, 42 hours from Wyoming to Florida in 2 days by himself. So obviously, and the cops kind of picked up on this too, things kicked off from there. The cops are like, wait, what is going on? So legit, while the cops were at the laundry's house, they were like, this is Gabby's van. It's under her name. It's her property. She's not here. We're going to seize it. Very smart decision. The laundry's shouldn't have had access to it or even have it at all. And so this is when the Gabby Petito search really started to kick off 11 days after she had been last heard from. Now, the search ended up happening in multiple states, or it kicked off in multiple states. And that is because at this point, and it's all hearsay, obviously, at this point, of where Brian and Gabby actually were. They were on this road trip and they had been in different places, bouncing all over the place. So cops and law enforcement agencies in multiple states kind of needed to get involved in order to find where Gabby was, or, you know, what she was doing. There was no physical proof that they had ever made it to the Grand Teton National Park. Remember, there were no social media posts. So I do want to say that pretty much immediately, and this is something that when we really realized what was going on, we as in the three of us, is social media picked up on this story like the day that it went viral, like the day it went live. Gabby's disappearance was massive on social media. And personally, I'm a Facebook, Instagram girl. I don't have anything else. And I remember that every single thing, like just scrolling down my phone, had to do with Gabby, her face, her in front of the butterfly mural. Like, we need help finding this girl. She was 22, you know, like she looked very normal kind of thing. And I swear everyone knew about it. And it was because it bounced off in social media. So I will give cred where credit is due.
This is like the modern day Lacey Peterson.
Absolutely. Missing. Somebody somewhere posted her picture on Instagram and somehow it went viral.
Well, I mean, not to be a Debbie Downer, but it's a missing white woman.
A missing blonde white woman as well. Like, it's just, there's, I actually ended up not putting that into the story. Like, I was going to talk about the statistics and stuff, which I probably should have now that I'm looking back on it. But I was trying to cut down the story a little bit because it was running a little long. You know, I get really into things like this. But statistically, the changes in the percentages between white persons being investigated on missing persons reports compared to any other fucking race was like 50 to 10. Like, it was the most, it was absolutely nuts. And I will say at the end of this, a lot of people ended up getting closure on missing person reports because of this case. The Petitos really advocated for something like this to happen. So it did help, but in this case, small, young, pretty, blonde, white woman goes missing. Oh my God, the US is like, where is she? We all need to find her. We all became internet sleuths at this point, trying to figure out what the fuck happened. So what made things a little bit better too, is that because it was within multiple states, like state borders, who joined the investigation? The FBI, baby. So at that time that the investigation was going on, Brian's family refused to speak or comment on anything. They just kept saying, like, refer to our attorney. They ain't going to help whatsoever. Brian also never spoke publicly either. He had his attorney put out a statement at some point saying that Brian was revoking his Fifth Amendment right, you know, refusing to say anything that would incriminate him, and that, quote unquote, he wanted to remain in the background. Look, your girlfriend's missing in a very weird circumstance. You're not going to exit the house. You're not going to speak to the media or the cops. And you're going to say that you want to remain in the background of the investigation. It makes no fucking sense in the moment. Like, everyone pretty much right away was like, they had something to do it with it. Like, immediately.
It is also very baffling to not even come up with, like, a fake story.
Come up with a fake story. Like, if you guys are ever in trouble and you did something bad, come up with a story. Because otherwise, everyone immediately was like, Brian Laundrie did something. Like, it was literally, no, in no moment or time did I think anything else had happened to Gabby.
Never. It's like, never. She broke up with me and then she took a flight home. I don't know what happened after that. It's like, oh no, I drove 42 hours straight. I have no idea. I'm not telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, he probably did the worst thing in the public's eyes by not making something up, because we're all like, oh, you're guilty. But from a police's perspective, they were probably so pissed because they had nothing to get him on or show that he's lying. So he probably, if you're a criminal, I hate to say doing the right thing, but he's giving them nothing to work with.
Regardless of all that, funny enough, the only person in the Laundrie family that actually gave a shit about anything going on was Brian's sister, Cassie. Cassie actually, throughout this entire thing, was very active in the search and even spoke to the media about how concerned she was for Gabby and how she wanted to help in any type of way. And so as this search went on, Gabby's parents wrote this open letter that was said to the public as well, like through one of the meetings or interviews or something. So they basically wrote to Brian's parents begging them to help in the case. And this letter stated the following. So, quote, Christopher and Roberta Laundrie, we are writing this letter to ask you to help find our daughter. We understand that you guys are going through a difficult time as well, and your instinct is to be strong to protect your son. We ask you to put yourselves in our shoes. We haven't been able to sleep or eat, and our lives are falling apart. We believe you know the location of where Brian left Gabby. We beg you to tell us. As a parent, how could you let us go through this pain and not help us? End quote. So as this was going on, it was assumed in the moment that Brian was still at his parents' home. Like, but nobody had seen him, but he was still at his parents' home. He hadn't made any public appearances since the missing persons report went out. That often led the police to like constantly canvass the Laundrie's home, like home area and the neighborhood, but it didn't help that the entire time, because this case was viral, everybody knew it, it was public, that 24/7, there were swarms of people outside the Laundrie house. They were yelling at the Laundries. They were protesting. They were wanting justice for Gabby. I mean, they basically had to keep their windows closed the entire time, stay inside unless necessary. It was like, if you weren't guilty, it's a scary situation.
I remember vividly people filming them like in the backyard, like gardening, and they're like, oh my God, they're burying Gabby's body.
Yeah.
I remember that.
So on September 13th, 12 days after Gabby's last contact, Gabby's stepdad flew to Wyoming to help with the search of Gabby. So this is when the local police, along with the FBI, began canvassing the Grand Teton National Park, which is what they think was the last known place. So obviously this was going to be like a super hard search. If you don't know, the park is massive. In fact, I had to look it up because I just was curious. 310,000 acres. So they searched on foot, by horseback, by ATVs, by drones, by helicopters, pretty much any and everything in order to find Gabby. 4 days after the investigation into her disappearance began, so September 15th, a pretty big detail was made in public. It was the body cam footage that we talked about earlier from the Moab City Police. The Moab City Police Department actually released it themselves. This video went viral immediately. I mean, we all saw it when it got posted, basically, and it was a huge discovery for the public to see. September 17th, 6 days into the investigation, A call was made to the laundry house for a welfare check on Brian. So this part was a little weird to me because Brian hadn't been seen in 16 days, basically. But I don't really know who called the welfare check, but someone, and I think the Netflix special talks about it more. Some podcasts talk about it more, but the person called and was like, this dude might be dead in that house. Like, you guys haven't seen him. You don't know where he is. He might be in there dead. Can you do a welfare check? And that's when the police were like, yeah, we should probably do that. So they showed up to the laundry house, and that's when they found out from the Brian's parents that Brian, in fact, was not in the home. In fact, he hadn't been there for a few days. He supposedly went for a hike and never returned. His parents are saying this, which is freaking nuts. Like, in that moment, the parents were like, you know what? Why don't we report Brian missing? So Brian is reported missing. So this is all just fucking nuts in the moment. People were livid. The world was livid. Gabby's gone. Brian's apparently missing. The police were supposed to be canvassing and like have straight up security on the laundry house. So like nobody could get in and out without them knowing Brian was gone. How did he do it? What the hell are wrong with his parents? Who knows any of those answers?
That really confused me in the Netflix doc, the welfare check. And then police show up. The family's like, oh yeah, we want to report him missing. They definitely called in the welfare check. Why didn't they just call the police and report him as missing? I don't understand why.
That's what I think too, because when you listen to the actual audio of the welfare check, because you can hear it online, it doesn't say who it was. And it's not like I know the voice of his dad or anything. I didn't think it was his dad. But then when the police get to the door, they are like, oh, Brian hasn't been here in days. We would like to report him missing. And you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, they were not surprised at all that the police were there doing a welfare check.
No.
How did he slip out?
I always question that. And then I saw, and I only saw one thing that said this, that according to the police, and I think honestly they were just like tracking them, like covering their tracks kind of situation, they thought that Roberta had left in a car, and it turns out it was actually Brian. If you look at the two of them, two different completely body sets, like not the same, she's shorter, he's taller, he's skinnier kind of vibe. I think the police were just like retracing their steps in this moment too. I do want to mention, because in my head, I'm like, oh, if you're in the car and you hide and you pull out of the garage, like, of course they're not going to know. Nobody in the laundry family parked in the garage. All of their cars were outside, which is also something I found a little weird. So how did Brian get to the car without the police knowing? They said it was, they mistook him for Roberta, his mom. I don't really understand that being the case. I think it was maybe something else. I'm not sure what it was.
But not to mention the public was outside their house almost constantly, maybe not at night. But I mean, yeah. I remember watching live streams of like drone footage over their house, like Kylie said. I mean, how did people miss this? It was confusing.
It made no sense. So once Brian was reported missing, that is when two sets of people ended up reaching out to the police about having encountered Brian earlier on in the year when he was supposedly with Gabby traveling the US. So on August 27th, let me get into these two stories. So on August 27th, van life vloggers, their name were Jen and Kylie. That is not right. Jen and Kyle. I was just so used to writing Kylie's name. So Jen and Kyle were driving through the Spread Creek campsite. And while they were driving through this campsite, they were videoing the entire drive because this was going to be like part of their YouTube story or whatever. And that's when they accidentally caught Brian and Gabby's white van on video, parked on the side of the road at the Spread Creek campsite. Obviously, in the moment, they think nothing of it. It wasn't until a month later, after hearing all the news of Gabby being missing, Brian now being missing, the white van, the location potentially, that it hit Jen and Kyle that they had footage of this fucking van. They realized this after the fact. And so they called the police to tell them, like, hey, we found this footage. The second person that came forward, her name was Norma Jean. Love that name. She was a Wyoming resident. She was leaving the Grand Teton National Park on August 29th. And when she was leaving the park, she ended up picking up a hitchhiker named Brian Laundrie. She drove Brian to the Spread Creek campsite, which is where the band was. This was about a 30-minute drive from Grand Teton. Once they got to the campsite, like the gates of it, basically the entry, Brian hopped out of the car super quick. And Norma Jean like was like, I'll drive you in. I'll drive you to the car. Like, it's fine. Like, it's nothing. And he jumped out and he was like, no, I'm good. Peace out. Bye. He would then walk from that area to wherever the band was or whatever he was doing. Obviously, in the moment, Norma Jean was like, weird, but not that weird. Like, what? He's a hitchhiker. So she didn't think of it until later when she found out and saw pictures and, you know, the whole situation came to light. So she reported that to the police as well. So the reason that these two accounts are super important, it is now because these two accounts spoke up that the cops and the investigators were given a real life actual timeline and location of where Brian and Gabby were pretty much when Gabby went missing. You know, the last time anybody heard from Gabby was August 30th. So when you're telling me that Norma Jean had Brian on the 29th and the Jen and Kyle had footage of the 27th, that's pretty much a lot. That's when we know is the last time Gabby was heard from. So before they were searching the entire Grand Teton National Park, now they're able to really zone in into where Gabby's last moments were. And that was the Spread Creek campsite. On September 19th, after the two accounts were told to the police about the last known locations, the Grand Teton police, along with the FBI, began their search. And this time specifically in the Spread Creek area. Searching on foot, horseback, they scoured the land for about 2 days. When they were doing the search, it had been about 20 days since Gabby's last contact and about 9 days since her missing persons report was filed. Within that 48 hours of them searching, because they were searching throughout the night as well, a police officer that was on horseback called in that he had found a body. This body was laying on its side, wearing a sweater. The shoes were off of the body and placed next to it. Next to the body was a semi-burnt scarf, almost as if a fire was attempted to be started but didn't work. This was the body of 22-year-old Gabby Petito. After an autopsy of Gabby's body was conducted, the manner of death was listed as a homicide, and the manner of injury was quoted with consistent of strangulation, end quote. It's pretty fucking obvious right there and then. We all know you can't mistake that. Gabby had been strangled to death. At that time that Gabby's body was found, though it was quite suspicious and quite apparent, the police weren't actually able to pin Brian as a suspect or even the main suspect. And that's because there wasn't any physical proof or evidence, you know, like there's literally nothing to tie him other than like hearsay and what we picture in our heads of like the timeline. Once Gabby was found, police were able to hone in to the phone records, which is what I really loved about the case. Now, shooketh, absolutely shooketh, that this wasn't something, I mean, I have to imagine with the FBI on it too, they had already gone through Gabby and Brian's phone records, but they weren't able to hone into a location until they found out about the Spread Creek campsite, like area, like where Gabby ended up being found. It was there, like when they ended up looking into the phone records some more, that they found Brian had called his parents multiple times for long periods on or around August 27th. On the exact same day, Brian's father's phone records, after he had finished talking to Brian, showed that he contacted his family attorney. During this entire period, between the dates of August 27th and August 30th, there are many texts bouncing between Gabby and Brian. But with this new cell phone information, police were able to determine that the texts were coming from the exact same location and being sent at the exact time. First of all, okay, just want to throw this out there. When I saw this, because we kind of knew what was happening when we saw like the text interaction. It's 2021, baby. If you send me a text at 12 p.m. and I send a text at 12:01, it shows on our phones. You know, like we can see the exact time that anyone sends you a text. And so the police saw that anytime Brian texted Gabby and Gabby responded, it was within the exact same timeline, like time frame, and within the exact same location.
like, I'm sure you text your husband in the same house, but they're seen in a van. Like, there's no need to text each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty obvious at this point that Brian had been texting himself off of Gabby's phone while then responding to himself on his phone. Now, knowing that Brian most likely departed from Wyoming on August 30th, like we originally thought, the police were able to find the security footage from multiple places of like exterior security footage of the van on like roads or highways traveling back to Florida. And that is exactly when, on August 30th, that text to Gabby's mom about Stan, the grandfather, went out. So more of an alibi. Along with that, the police were also able to find that on Brian's drive back home to Florida, to Northport, he used Gabby's debit card multiple times, and he had even Venmo'd himself money from her account. And there was like some message on that Venmo of like, it made it basically look like Gabby had broken things off with Brian and was like, here's some money. Don't talk to me. Never see you again. So like just more of that alibi of like Gabby left him and he's just going back home, but he has her van. Okay. At the same time that this discovery was all happening, Northport police back in Florida noticed that there had been a car parked at a local hiking spot for multiple days. This car had received multiple citations, so that's why it was kind of like flagged. Brian's parents happened to mention, happened, emphasis, that this park was one of Brian's favorite places to hike. This park was called the Micahatchee Creek Environmental Park. And putting two and two together, the police went there to where the car was parked, realized it was Brian's car. Investigators now had an area to search for Brian. So the Micahatchee Creek Environmental Park, smaller than the Grand Teton, that being said, about 20,000 acres, still fucking massive, full forest, full marsh, wouldn't really consider it about a popular hiking trail, at least personally, wouldn't be into that. Right away, all law enforcement, multiple agencies came in, scouted the area together. There was so much land to look after, so they kind of did the same thing that they did in Gabby's search, went on foot, ATVs, swamp boats, search dogs. They didn't do horses, but many of locals ended up later on searching as well. And that included drones and planes. So unfortunately, what we did learn is that in the weeks leading up to Brian's disappearance, Northport, Florida had been quite a shit show weather-wise. It had been raining, flooding, and this park was like completely drowned in water. So it made the search overall very difficult to manage. And I also want to think about search dogs. I'm very like pro search dogs. Phenomenal work that they do. Most likely correct most of the time. But when there is water, especially flooding, especially having rained the night before or something like that, scent is gone. So the dogs were kind of going all over the place. They had no idea. This search for Brian was weeks long. Weeks. So we're now at the end of October, October 20th. Brian was now missing for 37 days. The environmental park was actually now, starting this day, open back up to the public. I didn't know this, but because I assumed the park was closed for the public because of the investigation. It was not that, apparently, for some reason, but they actually had closed the park because of the flooding. Was like the flooding was so bad. So now that it was available to the public, locals and non-locals came out in swarms to assist in the search. Two of those people were Chris and Roberta Laundrie, Brian's parents. At 7 a.m. in the morning when the park opened, Chris and Roberta went on foot themselves to try to find their son. An hour later at 8:08 a.m., a search that had been going on for weeks by hundreds of people, Chris and Roberta Laundrie found Brian's waterproof bag that he often hiked with. At 9 a.m., 2 hours into their search, the Laundries found Brian's remains. His location? Only a mile from where the entrance of the park was and where his car was parked. So you're gonna tell me that for weeks, hundreds of people, law enforcement agencies of all sort, including the FBI, could not find him or anything related to him. But his parents go out to that park and within 2 hours find his remains and his personal items.
Hot take, I'm not buying it. Not at all. Hot take.
A little odd, isn't it?
A little fucking odd. I also want to mention there is footage, like body cam footage, of Chris and Roberta Laundrie like entering the park, searching, because there was law enforcement with them at all times. They both had backpacks and shit like that. Not saying like they did something out there, but it would have been easy, you know, to like maybe drop something here or there. Maybe find something that had been hidden. Just throwing that out there. Because of the past weather leading up to this, when Brian's body, or lack thereof, was found, it was just bones. His body had decomposed so badly that the only thing left of him were, in fact, his bones. And something I'm going to talk about later, but Brian ended up only being identified by his dental records. His cause of death, though, was a gunshot wound to the head. Obviously, the finding of Brian's remains made everybody pissed off. The community in the world was outraged. There was now a very slim likelihood that we were going to really find out what happened to Gabby. You know, there was not really any proof. And now our one person we needed proof from is gone. And fortunately, well, I don't know if it's fortunate because we're never going to really know the truth, but in some of the belongings that Brian had with him was a notebook. And this is I already know the girls and I, this is one of our favorite parts of the story. In this notebook, along with letters to his family apologizing and saying goodbye, there was two things. The first thing, there was a letter. And in this letter, it stated the exact accident that Brian, quote unquote, happened to Gabby. And I'm going to read this letter to you, okay? So, quote, "It was an unexpected tragedy. Rushing back to her car, trying to cross the streams, I hear a splash and a scream. I can barely see. I found her breathing, barely, gasping. She was freezing cold. Her temperature had dropped. When I pulled Gabby out of the water, she couldn't tell me what hurt. While carrying her, she continually made sounds of pain. Lying next to her, she said in between her violent shakes, gasping in pain, begging for a way to end her pain. I ended her life. I thought it was merciful. But from the moment I decided to take her pain away, I knew I couldn't go on without her. I rushed home to spend any time I had left with my family. I wanted to let Gabby's dads kill me. I am ending my life because I cannot stand to live another day without her. Please do not make this life harder for my family. They have lost a son and a daughter," end quote. According to Brian, at some point at the end of August, Gabby hurt herself somehow crossing a stream. And her pain was so horrible, she said, "Kill me, Brian." And he was like, "I'll do it." And then he regretted it. And then he decided to kill himself. Okay. The first thing when I saw that letter and like heard about it, I was like, oh, you decided to end her life humanely by strangling her. I don't really think that's the way that like you would. First of all, if you're going to do something of that manner, you're going to suffocate, like put a pillow on her, you know, like that sounds horrific, but strangulation is not what you go for when you're like, I'm going to ease their pain into death.
If anybody, especially any person that I loved, hurt themselves and was like, just end it for, like, I'd be like, no.
What is going to the hospital?
I'm going to do everything I can to get you to a hospital. That is not even a thought in my mind of a possibility.
No. No, even if I was on like a deserted island, there's no help. I know you're going to die. I could not make myself do that. Zero chance.
Zero.
If we're like in the fucking war zone battlefield, you have open, like I can tell that you are dying and you're like, I'm dying. If I had a weapon, potentially, if I knew it was like you're donezo, in this moment, using your hands and also knowing we don't know what kind of injury, because obviously he never said it, if the injury was even real to begin with, but strangulation ain't the way to do it, bro. Ain't the way to do it.
Yeah, that never happened. I don't buy that for 5 seconds.
I don't think anybody did. But my favorite part of this whole story, after they found Brian's body, bones, and his belongings, they went back to the laundry house and were able to do like a more thorough search and stuff like that. They were going to see if they could help find anything that would maybe point them to help find Gabby. So they found a letter. Now, I know Kylie and Holly are going to say the exact same thing because we freaked out when this letter went public because it was so weird. And this letter was from Roberta, Brian's mom, to Brian. The title of this letter, you ask? Earn After Reading. Quote, I just want you to remember I will always love you, and I know you will always love me. You are my boy. Nothing can make me stop loving you. Nothing will, or nothing can ever divide us. No matter what we say, we will always love each other. If you're in jail, I will bake a cake with a file in it. If you need to dispose of a body, I will show up with a shovel and garbage bags. If you fly to the moon, I will be watching the skies for your reentry. If you say you hate my guts, I will get new guts. Remember that love is a verb, not a noun. It is not a thing. It is not words. It is actions. Watch people's actions to know if they love you, not their words. The next part of this letter, Roberta wrote a quote from the Bible, and that said, therefore, I am not certain that in death or life, nor angels, nor the ruling of spirits, nor things present or those to come, not powers, not those above powers or powers from below, nothing in the entire world created can separate our love. Neither hostile powers, no messages of heaven, no monarchs of earth, nothing has the power to separate us. End of Bible quote. The final message written in Roberta's letter to Brian was, quote, nothing can separate us. Not hatred, not hunger, not homelessness, not threats, not even sin. Not the thinkable or unthinkable can get between us. Not time, not miles and miles and miles. End quote. So yeah, that was the fucking letter. Hashtag boy mom. Weird shit, man. I mean, obviously, not a good look. Not a good look, Roberta. First of all, the poetry. Great. You did a phenomenal job writing this letter. It sounded like like I'm reading what in a room of an audience kind of thing. If you need to dispose of a body, I will show up with a shovel and a garbage bag. You don't write that, okay? First of all, I don't even think you should say that out loud. Obviously, the laundries and the laundry's attorney at some point tried to say, like, this was before Gabby went missing, blah, blah, blah. Okay. The police had scoured through the laundry stuff and just now found the letter after Brian's body was found, after Gabby's body was found. You're going to tell me that wasn't in the midst of things?
Yeah, it almost makes it worse. Like, you know, your kid could be a killer and you're writing him this message.
Yeah.
Before any of this happened. Odd.
It sounds like they had a really weird relationship. She was maybe not him to her, but her to him for sure. Like, she was infatuated. Like you said, Kylie, boy mom for sure. Like, that is just up his butt kind of situation. What we do know is that on August 27th, that was the last time anyone heard from Gabby. 2 days later, August 29th, Brian and his parents phoned each other multiple times. Same day, his parents called their family attorney. 3 days later, the laundry state, Brian arrived home. That was September 1st. Gabby was reported missing 10 days later on September 11th. Gabby's body was found on September 19th. And on October 20th, Brian's body was found. November 17th, 2022, a year later, a little over a year later, Gabby Petito's family filed a wrongful death lawsuit against Brian Laundrie's parents. I think, unfortunately, but they resulted in a $3 million settlement. The Petitos also sued the Laundries and their attorney, claiming emotional distress and pain due to them withholding information regarding Gabby's disappearance and death. In February 2024, this lawsuit was settled after mediation, but the terms were never made public. In November of 2022, the Petitos actually filed a $50 million lawsuit against who? Moab Police Department in Utah. This lawsuit, though, like we kind of talked about before, it ended up being dismissed, and it was dismissed in 2024. Like, it took a while for the judge to figure out what he wanted to do. But the judge claimed that the Moab Police Department actions did not contribute to Gabby's death. Obviously caused a little bit of an outrage, and the Petitos are currently appealing that judge's decision. So we don't have an update on that. That is happening as we speak. Recently on social media. Now I'm just saying social media. Potentially Brian is still alive. And maybe he's fled the country or something of that sort. And that is because somewhere somebody said or found out the forensic dentist, all right, bear with me, forensic dentist who identified Brian Laundrie's bones and identified him through his bones. Did it through his jawbone, not his dental records, his jawbone. Now, if you know anything about forensic stuff and how they identify people, they usually take your past dental records, compare it to what's found on the scene bone-wise, can make a match through previous dental history. To be identified through your jawbone, wouldn't say that's the norm. I personally have never heard of anybody being identified through their jawbone, but the claim is the dentist was related to the Laundrie family. So is Brian still alive? Were those remains his?
For the sake of drama, I will entertain this idea, but yes. Since the FBI is involved, I feel like they would have followed up. At least you would think.
My last thing is this claim has been apparently debunked by police, but a lot of internet sleuths still think there is a relation. In the end, it was recognized by law enforcement and the FBI that Brian Laundrie did in fact kill Gabby Petito. But because he was deceased as well, there were no formal charges for her death. And that is the disappearance and the death of 22-year-old Gabby Petito.
You did a great job, Kate. I have one critique.
Oh, all right.
Public critique.
Get right to it, Kylie. Get right to it.
You never brought up Dog the Bounty Hunter.
It was a minor thing, dude. You're right. You're right. I should have put... You know what? For the sake of you, Kylie Colwell, I should have put that in there. You guys, when Bryant went missing, who came out our favorite hero of all time? Dog the Bounty Hunter. He went out to help search for Brian.
I will say he was very wrong. He thought he was like in the Keys or on some remote island. He was searching some remote island off the coast of Florida, but he was there.
He was there. You're right, Kylie. I did. I totally forgot. I was like, it's so minor. He didn't find anything. We grew up loving the aspect of Dog the Bounty Hunter. If you don't know who that is, please, dear God, do your research. It is just phenomenal.
Dog the Bounty Hunter is like my dream guest for this podcast.
I could see that being like,
guest on my podcast.
Like, Kylie, if you're like on your deathbed and they're like, who's the last person you want to talk to or sit at a dinner table with? I could see it being Dog.
I think, top three. Dog the Bounty Hunter, Nancy Grace, Mariska Hargitay.
Oh, ooh, I'm adding that one. Ooh, yes. You know, she's an actress, but like the girl can solve some crimes. There's no way after you do like 5,000 episodes, at least she's in it all.
Please tell me you got the JoJo Siwa reference.
I didn't hear you. Sorry. Say it again.
Oh, no, man. I said dream guest on my podcast.
No, dream guest on my podcast.
That was really good, Kate.
That was really good.
I was a little surprised. Goodness. Dream guest on my podcast. No, see, that was worse. It was good. It was good the first time. I'll leave it at
yeah.
That. Yeah, that was really good. Hold on. Well, you guys, an episode I never thought I was gonna do. I got way too hyped for it. I'm not gonna lie. I'm gonna give myself a pat on the back. Pretty much knew all of that except for like one or two things. But I do want to shout out some of my favorite podcasts, you know, Crime Junkie, obviously. My OG, my Lord and Savior is Mile Higher podcast, based out of Colorado, a couple. But I do want to state, I'm not heavy into murder docuseries right now because a lot of them are like overdone or over-dramatized. It's hard to like find really good ones. They did such a good job on the Gabby Petito docuseries on Netflix. I just watched it. I think it was 2 weeks ago. And I was like, wow, they did good. And my favorite thing that's come out of the Gabby Petito Netflix special is that people online, straight females who were married, usually straight females, are on Instagram, TikTok, shit like that. And they're like watching the Gabby Petito documentary might be turning gay for the FBI agent. And I don't know if you guys have watched it, but
I know who you're talking about.
I'm not saying me personally, but I found it hilarious that I've seen it so many times where it's like, I am a straight female. I am also married. I have kids, but you tell me right now that FBI agent in Gabby Petito's like documentary isn't something.
No, yeah, you know, you just know when a person is an attractive person, and she's attractive, but she's
Bye.
also obviously gay.
Very.
But
But
she's a very beautiful
gorgeous.
person.
Yeah, she's a gorgeous girl. And badass.
And
Badass.
badass.
FBI agent. She's located in Tampa. Can't remember her name. Barry Mask. Beautiful. Yep, that's all I've got, ladies. Oh, happy 100.
Happy 100.
I hope we
We're
have
on
100
pace.
more.
We will. We'll have 700 more.
Every
And
more.
they're just going to keep getting better.
You can't get rid of us. No, we're here forever. So we're going to jump into overtime really quickly. I know today's episode went a little bit longer than usual. Hope you're still all listening. You should be because it was great. Kylie, hit it.
In honor of our 100th episode, I was thinking about what was the first true crime case I like followed in real time. And funny enough, because she has resurfaced on the internet, it was Casey and Kaylee Anthony.
That's a good one.
Like, I'm in Central Florida at the time. It was like 2008. That all happened. And then immediately after was like Trayvon Martin. And so that was like the first big case I followed in real time. So I wonder if you guys had any. Do you remember at
Gosh,
least?
man, dude.
that's a good one. I might have to think on it.
You know what mine is? I'm heading all the way back, and I actually did an episode on it. Can't retell you the number of it. Freaking what's his name in the staircase in Durham, North Carolina, in like 2012 or whatever it was, 2008, 2016. I can't remember what year it was, but it was
Yeah.
while we were awake and in the world when he did or did not push his wife down the stairs in their Durham Raleigh home. That was the first one I think in the moment because it was a local case that
That's
I
true.
was
Yeah.
like, what is this?
Yeah, you were like kind of right there. I didn't know about that one until the Netflix documentary or the HBO
What?
one. Yeah.
Really?
No idea about
The
it.
first thing I heard from that case wasn't when it actually happened. It was after it had happened, like immediately after it happened, when they thought it could have been a bird, a hawk.
The
And
owl
then,
theory, dude,
oh
which is a
my
really
gosh.
good fucking theory. I'm gonna put it out there. It's a really good theory. If you haven't listened to that episode, go listen. That's a great case. We'll write it somewhere to know what episode number for you guys to go look at. But that was my first case that I was like, wow. Yeah. What about you, Holly?
Gosh, I don't know. I really don't know.
Hard. Casey
It's
Anthony's
too
a good
hot.
one too.
What is?
Casey Anthony.
Yeah, I followed that one, but I don't know if I was an avid follower.
I feel like I'm not gonna lie, all of us, without us knowing, probably could have been JonBenet Ramsey, just
Yeah.
having like heard of it, you know?
That's one
Yeah.
I knew. And I think Natalie Holloway.
Oh, that's
I
another good
remember
one too.
seeing Natalie Holloway on like
Yeah.
People magazine.
Yep, on the cover.
Yep.
What is the
Maybe
other
not.
one that missing? Madeline McCain.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if anybody followed that one.
Yep, that was a
Okay.
really good one. Michael
Yeah.
Peterson and the Staircase is episode 22.
Okay.
Damn, that long
That was a
ago?
good one.
I honestly, I'm gonna give myself credit for that. That was a good episode. And it's because I actually, and as horrible as it sound, I really enjoyed that story. There were so many twists and turns to it and weird shit. And if you haven't watched the Michael Peterson documentary on Netflix, that's also a really good one. It's called The Staircase.
Yes, really good documentary.
Yeah.
That
Oh,
was,
yeah, the owl theory was fucking good, dude.
I think that was the case we bonded over. I remember us talking about true crime docs before class started, and I was like, have you guys heard about the staircase? And Kate was like,
We're
let me
so
tell you about the staircase.
let me tell you about it.
Yeah.
Let me talk about the
I
staircase.
actually know Michael Peterson.
That's so great.
Oh, no, those are good ones. Those are really good ones. What is one case that fucking blew your mind, even to this day? Can you think of anything off your top of your head?
Yeah, the Idaho
Oh.
four. I'm freaking baffled.
Oh.
I'm
Wait,
baffled.
can we do an update? We have an update. I didn't even think about it until now. The text messages were just released this past week of the actual text messages from the roommates who were alive in the basement and on the main floor. If you haven't seen them, go look at them. It's fucking weird. One of the roommates who was on the first floor, not the basement, there were two of them, texted the other one downstairs and was like, did you hear that? This is weird. No one's responding. And then she texted the roommates who had been murdered and was like, where are you? Why aren't you answering? Hello, did you hear that? And then there was a text from the basement one who was like, the ski mask was weird. The black ski mask is weird. Like, because we know now that they saw they saw him in the ski mask. So that was the update from this week because the trial is going on right now.
Creepy, creepy, creepy.
Absolutely fucking nuts. You're right, Holly. That is to this day still.
There's a few other cases like that where there's been multiple people, a lot of like family cases where there's been a lot of people murdered in the same house in a way that I'm like, how do you not wake up? Like, that's so creepy that there's someone right there being murdered beside you. It's taking a long time and you're just like sleeping through it or just like staying hiding. I don't know. It's so creepy.
And this one too was weird because it was fucking stabbing. Like, you think the noise would be, I just imagine my whole thing is like suffocation mixed with stabbing, no noise kind of thing going on. I don't know, but I do want to say on my end, at least, I think we all freaked out, especially over this case, and we're still freaked out over this case, is because the guy is us in a different world. Like, he was a crime person. He got his undergraduate, you know, in criminal justice or whatever. He, you know, he was really into exactly what we're doing right now. And I haven't said that he's guilty or not guilty. We don't know yet. The court of law will tell us. But I think it was just like kind of for us, we were like, wait, this dude who we all have done the exact same things of has done this thing that he tried to plan out like perfectly and stuff like that, you know? So
yeah. Spoiler alert. Next week, I will be doing a case that is slightly related to what we were just talking about, but not that case. So
you're going to have us guessing for a whole week.
Wait,
wait, no more hints. No more hints.
Yeah. Well, damn it, Holly. Now I'm going
to. Oh, you won't know it. It's old.
Oh, it's old. Okay. It's old, but won't know it.
Yeah. Maybe not. But if you're interested in cases, like I was saying, where people can be murdered in the same house and no one hears a thing, you might want to tune in next week.
Bye.
Ooh-hoo.
Bye.
Hold on, let me do our outro. All right, ladies, thanks for 100 episodes. Let's do 1,000 more. Thank you for everyone listening. I'm not even going to do our ending spiel because if you're at this point right now, you listen to us, you like us, you want to hear more of us. We like you too. Comment, subscribe. We love you. Rate us. Thank you for 100 episodes. Yeah. We appreciate all the support you guys have given us. And we will see you next week for another episode. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.